This message is presented to you by Pastor James Moore and New Life Community Church in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information or to donate, please visit newlifekc.com.
131 years ago, two baby boys entered this world. One was born to an Austrian couple whose marriage was illegal because they were cousins. The father was harsh, had a bad temper. Now the mother, much younger than her husband, was interested in other things besides being a housewife and a mother. And so as soon as her husband died, she left her son with an alcoholic aunt who, as it turned out, was very abusive herself. So at 16 years of age, the boy dropped out of school, ran away from his aunt's house. He drifted from one job to another and finally enlisted in the German army. Well, after Germany's defeat in World War I, he tried and failed at various careers, including that of an artist. He took an interest in political activism, and he was in and out of trouble over the next few years. In fact, eventually he was imprisoned for leading an attempted insurrection. Well, after serving 3 years, his sentence was reduced when he promised to stay out of politics. By 1933, however, he'd gone back on his word and established himself as absolute ruler of the German people. He declared himself Führer, which means leader. The German nation, and ultimately the entire world, was plunged into war. And even in our day, people and nations are still paying the cost of his actions. Now, the other baby was born to a simple Texas family. His parents were loving, God-fearing, and when this child was only 2 years old, his family moved from a Kansas farm, where they became active in the Church of the Brethren. And during his childhood, his mother used to read to him from the Bible almost every evening. In fact, it was at her knee that he learned to pray. Now, in the German youth's life, there was no known Christian influence. But for the young Kansan, Jesus Christ was more than a name. He was a living reality. On June 6th, 1944, the entire world watched as the two babies of 1889 met on the field of battle. For 11 months, Adolf Hitler's Third Reich battled Dwight David Eisenhower as he commanded the Allied invasion force. And finally, on April 30th, 1945, Hitler committed suicide in his bomb shelter beneath the rubble of Berlin. And the world cheered. Dwight Eisenhower, on the other hand, he became the president of the United States and is the only U.S. president to have publicly confessed Christ and been baptized while in office. When the Russian premier Nikita Khrushchev toured the United States in 1959, he spent a weekend at Camp David with President Eisenhower. On Sunday morning, April 27th, the president invited Khrushchev to go to church with him. He declined. So the president went alone. And 10 years later, when Eisenhower died, the world mourned. Premier Khrushchev sent a telegram of condolence to Mrs. Eisenhower. And in the telegram, he said, he was the only man in America who inquired about my soul. Who could have guessed the effect of a Christian home upon the destiny of a young child, and indeed, the destiny of the whole world? I want to begin my message this morning by saying, I don't believe there's anything a person can do for this world or the next that's more important than raising a child to know Jesus Christ. As I'm sure you're aware, today is Mother's Day. And for the record, Mother's Day was not dreamed up by a mother. In fact, it was a brainchild of a loving daughter in Philadelphia. Her name was Ann Jarvis. And apparently way back in 1907, Miss Jarvis thought it might be nice to have a special service in church for sons and daughters to honor their mothers. Since then, however, I'm afraid there's been much more attention paid to the merchandise of Mother's Day than the basic idea. It has, in fact, become a merchandiser's holiday where we're shown item after item after item that we're told is the gift to tell Mom just how much we love her. But the simple fact is, the best gift of all is the love itself, especially since there's no way you can possibly give back to Mom as much as she's given to you since before you were even able to recognize it. I remember reading a paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 13. It went like this. If I live in a house of spotless beauty with everything in its place, but have not love, I am a housekeeper, not a homemaker. If I have time for waxing, polishing, and decorative achievements, but have not love, my children learn cleanliness, not godliness. Love leaves the dust in search of a child's laugh. Love smiles at the tiny fingerprints on a newly cleaned window. Love wipes away the tears before it wipes up the spilled milk. Love picks up the child before it picks up the toys. Love is present through the trials. Love reprimands, reproves, and is responsive. Love crawls with the baby, walks with the toddler, runs with the child, then stands aside to let the youth walk into adulthood. Love is the key that opens salvation's message to a child's heart. Before I became a mother, I took glory in my house of perfection. Now I glory in God's perfection of my child. As a mother, there is much I must teach my child, but the greatest of all is love. Paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 13. Yes, the greatest lesson to teach our children is to love. But the most urgent responsibility we have as parents is to teach our children how to live. And modeling is the most powerful unconscious form of learning that there is. Nothing influences our children more than our example. Someone once said, kids are hopeless. You educate them, you send them to church, you give them advice, and what good does it do? They still end up just like you. Now, most of us want the very best for our children, right? But the reality is, until we parents are willing to change and live our lives in accordance to the principles that God has established, our children will never have the best. I mean, if we'll take an honest look around, I'm sure most of us would agree that Americans tend to be a very undisciplined, pampered, selfish, and lazy people. Why, we think we're deprived if we have only one bathroom in our house, or if we have only a single car garage. Are you aware that America has more overweight people than any other nation in the world? While other countries have severe hunger problems, the United States is dumping thousands of tons of surplus grain into the ocean every year. We tend to be spoiled, fat, and materialistic, and we lack self-control. We scream for rights, but we do our best to avoid responsibility. We live for today, try not to think about tomorrow. And we owe everybody. As a nation, we are trillions in debt. And of course, then we try to blame everyone and everything else. We say, hey, it's the fault of the president, the banks, the economy, our employer, inflation, the illegal immigrants, the crime rate, the police, our in-laws, our rebellious kids, the public school system. No, it's the Democrats. No, it's the Republicans. No, it's ISIS. No, it's the World Health Organization. It's the governor. It's the mayor. It's the devil. It's the Jews. It's the Catholics. It's the Protestants. It's the cults. It's rap music. No, it's violent movies. It's the internet. It's the stock market. All I know is this. It's not my fault. No wonder we sing along with the old hee-haw gang. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. And God says, when are you going to grow up and take responsibility for your own actions? Oh, you of little faith, why don't you believe me? Why don't you trust me? Why don't you obey me? Hebrews 10:36 says, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. Oh, how this needs to be taught and ingrained into our children. Sadly, a great percentage of today's parents tell their children nothing about God's promises or His commandments or His great love. And you know why? It's because their parents never told them. Many people today, even nice people, live out their lives totally absent from any serious thought of God or Christianity or biblical values. They live with no authority other than themselves. And as a result, their children, that's the younger generation of today, their children know very little, if anything, of the true God and His Son, Jesus. Therefore, they have no confidence. They have no endurance and no reward. They're destined to a meaningless life on earth, followed by an eternity of torment, separated from the God who loves them. Now, let me tell you something that is just as bad. In fact, it may even be worse. There are people who claim to be believers, people who do tell their kids about God. They even bring them to church. There are people like that who still fail as parents because they refuse to discipline themselves to be anything more than lukewarm Christians. Oh, they speak the ways of God, but they practice the ways of the world. And as a result, their children, the younger generation of today, they don't take the claims of Christ seriously. Therefore, just like the unchurched population, they are destined to the very same meaningless life on earth, followed by an eternity of torment, separated from the God who loves them. If you've been attending our online church for the past few weeks, you've probably noticed I have been emphasizing that heaven will not be populated by people who only know about God. No, heaven will be the eternal home of those who choose to submit to God, those who will bow and serve at the pleasure of the King of the universe. Now, I imagine every parent hearing me today sincerely wants God's best for his or her child. And I can tell you there's no greater joy as a parent than knowing your child has a personal relationship with the Lord. But please hear me today, Mom, Dad. You cannot give that to them. You cannot earn that for them. You cannot buy it for them either. If you love your child and you want them to have a personal relationship with the Lord, all you can do is teach them and then model it for them. And then pray that your example will inspire them to choose it for themselves. And many of you know that Debbie and I have produced children who are athletic. Our children can run. They have wonderful strides. Our daughter Stephanie was on the relay team that set the school record at Oak Park High School. And also, she qualified for state and cross country. Our son Alex also was an all-state runner. And for years, held the Smithville High School record in cross country. He further excelled by qualifying for the national AAU competitions in the 1500 meter run and a 5K cross country meet at the national AAU championships. What this means is Debbie and I have spent considerable time at track meets and cross country events during our parenting years. Anyway, Do you know what this is? Both of our children have been on relay teams. And this is a baton that is passed from one runner to the next after each leg of the race. Now, there's a lot that goes into winning a relay race. Having the four fastest runners doesn't mean your team will automatically win. Many times, the difference in winning and losing is determined by the passing of the baton. Oh, much practice goes into the timing and the handoff and the exchange zone. See, two things are precious in a relay. Time and the baton. If you lose either one, the race is lost. This baton needs to make it from the beginning to the end, just as fast as possible. Anyway, as we've been attending in years past, we attended all these track and field events, I noticed something pretty interesting. Sometimes when one of the runners in a relay team completes their leg of the race, even though he or she is totally exhausted and can hardly catch their breath, they're close to tossing their cookies, they still go to the edge of the track and cheer on their teammate who they just passed the baton to. Isn't that interesting? However, I've also seen runners complete their leg of the race and just lay there and recuperate, paying absolutely no attention to their teammates. Why would that be? Also, I've seen spectators, you know, parents and family members and students stand up and cheer for a runner from a rival school. Now, what would possibly cause them to do such a thing? In addition, I've seen parents and fellow athletes and coaches become very upset at their own runner some yelling angrily while others expressed discouragement or disappointment. It's really quite curious behavior. And after giving it some thought, I think I figured out what the single ingredient is that caused each of these reactions and responses. Can you guess what it is? It's the effort of the runner. You see, there's something about seeing a person giving their all that will draw admiration and support from everyone around them. Okay, Pastor, you say, but that's a cute story, but what does this have to do with parenting? We're not high school athletes. Well, here's what it has to do with it. I believe the most effective way to influence and motivate this younger generation is for the adult generation to run with such determined, all-out effort that it causes young people to admire, respect, and support both the race and the team. Listen, if the first three runners of a relay team give their very best effort, run harder than ever before, how much pressure is on the anchor, on the last runner of that team when they get the baton? Parents, do you realize that the runner of the next lap of this race are our children? Do you see that we, the parents, we are the runners who will be passing the baton to them? And can you grasp that their motivation to run well will be greatly affected by how well we have run the race before them? On this Mother's Day, I want to once again challenge all you moms and all you dads to get turned on for God in order to motivate your kids to stay in the race, to continue the cause of Christ with zeal and with passion. Listen, we cannot expect our kids to be more radical than we are. Will you say this with me? We are responsible for our children. Let's say that again. We are responsible for our children. Do you grasp what that means? It means that we're going to be required to give an account to God for how they were raised and how they were equipped for each stage of their life, how they were prepared, and then how they were launched into their adult life. If you're a parent, it's time to step up. It's time to realize that your responsibility is much more than making sure the kids have food to eat and clothes to wear and that they get their homework done. See, it's your responsibility, not the pastor's, to see that they personally know God. It's your responsibility, not the school teacher's, to see that they receive a good education. It's your responsibility, not the guidance counselor's, to help them find God's will for their career. It's your responsibility, not the Sunday school teacher's, to find their place of ministry in the church. And it's your responsibility, not movie idols, not sports heroes. It's your responsibility to show what is important in life. And you do that by living it out in front of them. That is where your children will get their vision and their motivation and their determination and their drive. It's the parents who will one day stand before God and be asked to give an account for how they trained and prepared their children. The parents, no one else. You see, God's plan is for the family and home to be the child's foundation. The church and the school, they're merely extensions of the home. And what this means is that the success or failure in the home soon will become evident in the church and the school. Studies show that only 2 hours of parental teaching at home is just as effective as 6 hours at school. It's important for you to know, parents, your kids will believe you unless and until you show them that what you say is not being applied in your own life. We don't talk about it much anymore. But over the past century, our culture has been greatly and deeply infected by humanism. See, humanism is a belief that we humans are our own gods. Hey, you don't tell me what to do, and I won't tell you what to do, okay? You be God in your life, I'll be God in mine. That's humanism. And I believe God has allowed humanism to rise up in our nation in order to challenge us and motivate us. Motivate us to what? Motivate us to acknowledge, number one, our sin and the sins of our forefathers and turn from them. He's allowed that to rise up, number two, so we can learn and live by scriptural principles and teach them to our children. And number three, we need to learn to stand alone as individuals, as couples, as families, as churches, as businesses, and as a nation. Please hear me this morning, parents. The future is in our hands. Once again, I urge you to step up, to grow up, to be responsible adults. Love your kids enough to do what is right. Don't be concerned about being popular with your kids. The objective is not to get our children to like us. The objective is to earn our children's respect so they'll be open to our counsel and open to our influence. But this will never happen unless we first stand firm on what we believe and stop allowing our children to manipulate and intimidate us so they can get what they want. We're called to be parents, not buddies. We're called to be trainers, preparing our children to become responsible adults. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it." So please note, there's more to training than simply giving them direction and taking them to church. Training means demonstrating God's ways in our lives and then disciplining our children until they can demonstrate God's ways in their lives. Does that make sense? Parenting's not meant to go on forever. We're only to discipline our children until they can discipline themselves. We must prepare them to receive the baton. And then we must practice the handoff. Meanwhile, we must give ourselves fully to serving the Lord, running our leg of the race as we want our children to run theirs. Do you get it? Will you do it? If you believe this message was for you, I'd like to pray for you. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for reminding us of our responsibilities. Please forgive us for our self-centeredness and for the times we may have neglected our children by failing to model Christ in front of them. Help us stay fully committed to the race you've called us to run as a parent and a devoted Christ follower. We ask you to fill us with supernatural power and ability as we dedicate ourselves to your glory again today. Amen. Now, we love honoring moms on this special day that's dedicated to them, but we also realize that not all women are mothers. So on this Mother's Day, I'd like to conclude this message by addressing not only mothers, but I'm going to address all women. So, now, to those who gave birth to their first child this year, we celebrate with you. To those who lost a child this year, we mourn with you. To those who are in the trenches with little ones every day and wear the badge of food stains, we appreciate you. To those who experience loss through miscarriage, failed adoptions, or runaways, we mourn with you. To those who walk the difficult path of infertility, dealing with pokes and prods and tears and disappointment, we walk with you. Forgive us when we say foolish things. We don't mean to make this harder than it is. And then to those who are foster moms, mentor moms, and spiritual moms, oh, how we need you. And to those who have warm and close relationships with your children, we celebrate with you. To those who have disappointment, heartache, and distance with your children, we sit with you. And to those who lost their mothers this year, we grieve with you. To those who experienced abuse at the hands of your own mother, we acknowledge your experience. To those who live through driving tests, medical tests, and the overall testing of motherhood, we are all better because of you. To those who are single and you long to be married and mothering your own children, we mourn that life has not turned out the way you long for it to be. To those who step-parent, we walk with you on these complex paths. To those who envisioned lavishing love on grandchildren, and yet that dream is not to be, we grieve with you. To those who will have emptier nests in the upcoming year, we grieve and rejoice with you. To those who placed children up for adoption, we commend you for your selflessness and know that you hold that child in your heart. And to those who are pregnant with new life, both expected and surprising, we anticipate with you. You see, we appreciate women. Therefore, we stand beside you and we honor you. May God bless you all. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you for listening to this message. For more information, please visit newlifekc.com.